This is the Austin Road Show podcast. The Roads Rewind.
Donnie Schell, welcome to the Austin Road Show again. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Austin. Nice to be here.
Yes, sir. He spent most of the day in Augusta. We were over at Channel 12 shooting a commercial for his upcoming golf tournament, which we're going to tell you about in just a second. But I made a joke a couple weeks ago when we had Donnie on via the phone. We were saying that Troy Aikman was online, too, and he's got 3 Super Bowl rings, and that's not good enough. And Steve Young with 2, he shouldn't even be given the phone number. We're going with a 4-time Super Bowl champion to make predictions on these games, and here he is, 4-time Super Bowl champion. Donnie Schell of the Pittsburgh Steelers from 1974 and 1987. My goodness gracious. And he just told me something. Ben, you're going to die when you hear this. What grade were you in when you weighed 160 pounds? I was in fifth grade. What grade were you in?
Yeah, probably fifth or sixth.
He was an all-state offensive lineman, 160 pounds?
162 pounds, soaking wet.
That's insane.
That's unreal. And he ends up playing in the NFL as a strong safety, for Pete's sake. Unreal. First of all, what in the world, how in the world do you look as good as you do at your age? What are you, 50, 52 now?
I'm 66.
And he could beat all of us down the hallway on a quick sprint.
There ain't no question about that.
No doubt, no doubt. What do you do to keep in shape, Donnie?
Well, I do what I did when I was playing ball during the off season. You know, I didn't work out. I think we ended up our season after the Super Bowl, usually in January, and I didn't do anything until about April. So I just rested my body and take care of your body and eat right, and I try to just continue to do exercise and a little lifting, but mostly walking and just eating right.
Well, God bless you. Again, you're in great shape, and you look wonderful. You look like you're 40. You don't look like you look like you could. The Steelers need you. I don't know what you're doing during from September through December, but God knows we need you out there.
I'm retired.
Okay. Well, before we talk about the golf tournament, which is one of the coolest things I've ever been a part of in the area, it's a fantastic fundraiser for an incredibly worthy cause, and again, star-studded doesn't even begin to describe it. Let me get your prediction for this weekend. I heard this one time today because Channel 12 is asking the same question. But Donnie Schell, 4-time Super Bowl champion, and you lined up against the Los Angeles Rams back in 79, but it was actually 1980. It was the 79 season, but it turned 1980. So what are you thinking about the Super Bowl?
Hey, man, it's the Rams. Get the ball to Gurley, run the ball, and those two defensive tackles, I think it's going to get some pressure on Brady. And I think if they shut the run down and get pressure on Brady, they have a great chance to win the game.
So, obviously, Tom Brady's the franchise for the New England Patriots. When the Steelers were actually able to beat him earlier this year, which, by the way, was our Super Bowl, I didn't realize it at the time, but that ended up being our big game of the year, you put pressure on him, he becomes very mortal.
Yeah, he's an excellent quarterback, and those type of quarterbacks that throw on time, and you got to get them off their rhythm. You cannot let him sit back there and just throw the ball. My strategy would be to, and I think the Rams are going to do it, is to press those receivers and throw his timing off, and they get pretty good pressure with those two defensive tackles of the Rams, and I think they'd be very successful in doing that.
Well, it's funny. I don't remember how many sacks we had on him. Not very many, but T.J. Watt and Cam Hayward stayed up in his face. I don't think he threw 2 or 3 passes standing flat-footed. I mean, he was running, which Brady doesn't do well. And that's the way I think you beat him. And you think the Rams defense got the message, huh?
Oh, without question. We'll see on Sunday.
You got an over and under on how many times Aaron Donald's going to get to him?
No, I think they will get pressure on him. I think up the middle and with their two defensive tackles, and the outside linebacker Fowler is also a good edge rusher for them, bringing pressure. But you have to get pressure on Brady, and you have to make him hesitant. If they don't make him hesitant, he'll pick you apart. He's just that good, and you cannot allow him to do what he wants to do. And being a defensive player, you got to take that away from him.
Hmm. The game is so different from when you played it. Literally, you and Mel Blount inspired half the rules changes that they came out with. I've heard both John Stallworth, matter of fact, I think Stallworth said it on this show, and Lynn Swana said it to me out at Augusta National, where he's a member, by the way, which I'm sure you know about. If they had been able to play under the current rules, they'd have doubled their numbers, and you guys would have had 10 Super Bowl rings. What do you think about that?
Without question. I mean, they instituted the five-yard chuck rule back when we played.
That's right.
Now you can't even touch the receivers. I mean, you can't hit them when they catch the ball.
No.
Because they don't want you to I think the safety factor, which is good, but those guys would have run wild, have it over, I think, 100,000 yards.
Well, not only that, but you would also, Bradshaw would have retired last year. I mean, think about those quarterbacks. And, I mean, I know you personally sent 5 or 10 of them to the hospital. What in the world has happened to this game? I mean, it's almost like a different game. It really is.
Well, I think initially the rule they instituted was good, but I think it just got kind of overemphasized at the beginning of the season. And
talking about the protection rule.
Protection rule on the quarterback, yes. And I think they kind of loosened it up a little bit when all the complaints start coming in and they start missing some calls. And
except in that Chiefs game with the Patriots where somebody waved at Brady in his face and they threw a flag on him.
That was
crazy.
That wasn't too good
nuts.
Of a call. They missed it on that one.
Unbelievable. Well, it had to have been more fun than a little bit being part of that incredible team in the 70s. And while there have been legendary teams that have come through since the Steelers did what they did in the 70s. You had the Cowboys in the 80s or the 90s, rather. You had the 49ers in the 80s. You certainly have had the Patriots in the last 10 years. But the Steelers were really the first high-profile dynasty. When the Packers were doing well early in the Super Bowl era, they were mainly living off their championships of the past, and certainly Cleveland's great championship run had been in the past. Steelers were the first modern dynasty. What was it like being strapped into the roller coaster ride that was?
It was great. You know, when I got there my rookie year, I seen all these guys on TV, and come to find out that they're great guys. I think the one thing that separated us and made us such a great team that people don't really realize that we spent time with each other off the football field. And I think that built great camaraderie and great confidence in each other and when we had opportunities to play on the field.
There's no doubt that the Steelers draft your year that you came into the league was the greatest single draft by any team ever. And when you think about what all was there, I mean, it's crazy. You were drafted in 74, right?
I was undrafted free agent.
Oh, a free agent. I'm sorry. I meant the class that came in. Think about that. That is crazy. Wow. That, Lynn Swann, Jack Lambert, John Stallworth, Mike Webster, and you all came in that year. Does any draft class or freshman class compare to that? I don't know anybody's even close.
Yeah, I can't really think of any. I told Franco said that my rookie year, he said, "Hey, Rook, hey, we're going to the Super Bowl this year." I said, "Yeah, that'd be great." I said, "But you guys are doing pretty good, but you just need a little help." So we decided to come in and give you a little help to get to the Super Bowl. But now I can't think of any team that compared to that team. Not only Austin regarding football players and their talent, but men and their character. I think that separated us from a lot of different teams.
Pittsburgh Steelers seem to have enjoyed success going with the picks from the historic black colleges more than any other team, certainly early on. John Stallworth, Alabama A&M. Donnie Shell, South Carolina State. There's one man that was single-handedly responsible for tipping the Steelers off on all you guys, and his name was Bill Nunn. And he passed away a couple of years ago, but I was blessed to be at the dinner at the inaugural class of the Black College Hall of Fame, where he was one of the first people inducted. And he deserves to be in the NFL Hall of Fame. And I'm hoping that people with loud mouth like me and maybe men of your stature can help put that message through. But to the audience that does not know the name Bill Nunn, can you kind of tell who he was and what he did?
Yeah, he was a scout for Pittsburgh. I think the story goes that he's writing for the Pittsburgh Courier newspaper. And he wrote a critical article about the Steelers that they don't recruit from historical black colleges. And I think Mr. Dan Rooney read the article and called Bill and had lunch with him. He said, "Well, I want to talk to you about the article you had in the paper." He said, He said, "We don't." He said, "You're right. We don't." He said, "Matter of fact, that would you be interested in the job?" And he said, "Yes." And I think that's when the relationship built, and Bill had an outstanding relationship with all the head coaches in the historical black colleges. And I remember in 1974, my senior year, I wasn't drafted, and I got a call from him, and he said, "Well, Donnie, you realize that you wasn't drafted?" I said, "Yeah, you had 17 rounds. And I wasn't picked."
17 rounds, unreal. Yeah.
He said, "Well, would you like to sign with the Pittsburgh Steelers?" I said, "I sure would." And Bill also, for those of our audience that doesn't probably don't realize this, that he was the manager of the training camp, and he would intentionally put veteran players with rookie players and match them up, and he did a great job of that. And I think that's one of the reasons that we're so good also. But he just had a knack for talent. He had a good eye, and he would make, I'm quite sure, good suggestions to the Pittsburgh Steelers about players to put the pick.
By the way, a little trivia, which is kind of fun. Bill Nunn's son, who was Bill Nunn Jr., passed away a few years ago, too, unfortunately, at a very way too young age. But Google him, Bill Nunn Jr., and you will recognize him from about 100 movies. He was all over the place. Did you know him very well?
I didn't know him very well, but I met him several times. He, Bill always would bring him to camp on occasions, and that's how I met him.
He's one of those – when you see his face, you say, "Oh, yeah, I've seen him in everything from RoboCop." I mean, he was all over the place. He was in movies for 25, 30 years.
Yeah, when you see him, you see Bill Nunn.
Absolutely. It's just a very, very similar family resemblance there. Well, you have once again brought the Donnie Schill Invitational back to the Augusta area. You spent – 3 great years at Sage Valley. This year, you gotten so big, though, you needed a bigger facility. And now you're coming to Champions Retreat.
Yeah, and I like to say this about Sage Valley and Tom and Mr. Wyatt. For the first 3 years, they hosted our tournament, Austin, and they got us off the ground. You know, when you start any nonprofit organization, you got to have a good start. And they were so generous to us in our foundation, and got us kicked off on the right foot, and did a great job. And now we moved over to Champions Retreat, and we're excited about that and the venue over there. And we're excited about our tournament that raises money for students that their parents that can't afford to pay their college tuition.
And it's very, very important that you understand the role of the private sector and men and graduates, I'm going to say alum, like all the folks that are working on this project in honor of the Donnie Schill Tournament. This is a great way of doing it yourself. You don't depend on anybody else. You realize there's a need here. You step in. And let's be honest here. You're a man that's had a career. You could be sitting in a chair somewhere. You don't have to be doing this. You know, you don't make a dime off of it. There's nothing but school spirit and the will of the Lord backing you on this. And that means an awful lot to me. That's one of the reasons I wanted to get involved in it, is because I see all this hard work you guys are doing and, you know, what a great cause it is. What is it about the current generation that can learn a lesson on this example that you and the men and women are putting this type of tournament together? What could they learn from you?
Well, it started with my background. I came from 9 brothers and sisters. We didn't have very much coming up, and had no idea I would ever go to college and start getting involved with athletics. And through the encouragement of my coach, Lefty Johnson, in Whitmire, South Carolina, high school, he encouraged me that I could do whatever I wanted to do. I said, "Coach, my parents can't afford to send me to college." He said, "Well, you can get a scholarship if you keep playing like you're playing now." I said, "You know anything about a scholarship?" So he went in to tell me about that and encouraged me along the way. And we used to ride home every night and say, "You can be whatever you want to be, Donnie Schill. I've seen you on the football field, and you can do whatever you want to do." So I think from his encouragement, he sowed seeds of encouragement in me. And that's what we're trying to do with the Donnie Schill Scholarship Foundation, sow seeds and encouragement of young people that say that you can do and be whatever you want to be if you're willing to put the time and the effort into it.
So you've got this collection of incredible former players, Hall of Famers, Super Bowl champions that are coming in to support you. I'm taking a look at this list, and by the way, I was glad to be corrected on one thing. I thought my old buddy Rocky Blyer wasn't going to be able to come down this year, and Donnie was telling me, "Yep, we're adding his name to the list right now, as a matter of fact." So there is a list of players and celebrities that's incredible, that include both. Actually, you got at least one current player. My son's going to flip out. He loves Javon Hargrave. South Carolina State grad and current Pittsburgh Steelers defensive lineman. He is a beast.
He has done an excellent job, and I was talking through text just a couple weeks ago, and I just told him I saw a great article on the internet about you and about your hard work and your work ethic. And I told him just to continue. You're on the right path. Continue to work hard. Continue to get better. He's not satisfied, and he has the right attitude, and he's going to be a great one.
Well, I tell you what, that front line of the Steelers, it's as solid as any group in football. We just got to get our defensive backs upgraded a little bit. You sure you're retired? You sure?
Yes.
I'm telling you, I think you just sent the ball run for his money. So listen to this lineup. This is unbelievable, and it sounds like this golf tournament ought to be happening in Canton. You got Mel Blunt. You got Franco Harris. You got John Stallworth. You have Jerome Bettis, all Hall of Famers. You've got incredible names that have local connections, like David Green and Matt Stinchcomb, University of Georgia. You've got some other names, Steelers that did real well with the team, not necessarily Hall of Famers, but still very high-profile players, Cordell Stewart. Cliff Stout won a couple of Super Bowl rings with the Steelers. Mike Wagner, shame on me for not mentioning him. Jack Hydroplane Delaplane, who sat next to me, and Yancey Thigpen, who's also coming in at the dinner last year. What a fun group. And again, those of you that are Clemson fans, how about – is he the best defensive back in the history of Clemson, Terry Kinnard?
I would say so.
Yeah. I mean, is there anybody better? I can't think.
It's great. I've watched him from before. He's good.
it's unreal how good he was. You got guys like Barney Bussey.
Barney Bussey, that's right. Another one. That's right, from South Carolina State.
Now you had retired by the time he came along, right?
Yep. Yeah. He played with Cincinnati, yes.
Yeah. I had a funny moment with him. He lived in Augusta. He was from here, mm-hmm. And he knew me just at a distance because I anchored the news on the weekends, and I was watching the game in 1990. Watched him run. It wasn't quite a pick six, but it almost was. Right in front of me on the sideline at Three River Stadium. And as he was walking by me after he had been tackled, I let out an expletive. Not at him personally, just dadgummit Steelers, blah, blah, blah. Bubby Brister, bye, 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 bye. And he stopped, looked me dead in the eye, and said, Austin Rhodes, the one man in the entire state of Pennsylvania that knew who I was, heard me cuss him on the sidelines. It's unbelievable. So Barney Bussey, Barney Chavis, Willie Jeffries, Dwayne Harper, again, star-studded group, all of them gathered here. Oh, and my buddy, Rocky Blyer.
Absolutely.
Also coming in. So people are going to have a chance to play golf with these guys and actually meet them.
Oh, absolutely. Get a chance to play golf and also get a chance to meet and greet them at our parent dinner on the 28th. And that's going to be a fun time.
April 28th and 29th. I want to make sure everybody knows you don't have to run. Go do it right this second. Get your game practiced up.
Yeah.
April 28th and 29th.
28th and 29th. They can go to DonnieShell.com and sign up. Or if you don't play golf, you can go to DonnieShell.com and make a donation.
That's right.
And they go right to the scholarship to help these young people who are brilliant academically but just don't have the finances to pay their tuition.
And it's possible for you to come to the dinner even if you're not a golfer, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You can just go on to DonnieShell.com and sign up for the training camp table. And you can come in and enjoy, mix and mingle with our celebrities and also enjoy our auction that we're going to have that night.
Yeah, some wonderful items, by the way. Fantastic items and everything from player memorabilia to you had a couple trips, didn't you, last time? I don't know what all you
got. Last year, yeah.
Not sure exactly what all you got.
We got a little surprise this year.
Oh, what you got?
I got a DonnieShell game-worn jersey.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
Now, Mrs. Shell, by the way, made the trip with you. Did you fish that one out of the dirty clothes hamper, Miss Shell? The Steelers actually kept that.
Steelers actually kept that. And Mr. Rooney is very generous.
Now, I was going to say, I hope they washed it.
They washed
okay,
it.
Okay, all
right. Looks good.
Just making sure. It's not going to walk in by itself.
No.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I love men and women who have made it in life and who refuse to stop giving back. There are so many people that hit a certain spot in their life. Sometimes it's when they reach a certain money goal, they make X number of dollars. Sometimes it's an age. Somebody will hit 50, 60, 70 years old, and they quit. They just say, okay, I've done my time. I'm retired. And they retire from everything. Donnie Schell doesn't have an ounce of that in him, and it's amazing. He's a man who's constantly working to make the world a better place. And good gracious in the world, how much better off would all of us be if we had a little bit more of that going on, particularly in this day and time. We're having an ongoing conversation over the course of the last week or so about gun control and the tragedies that have unfolded in Louisiana and Florida. And then we get word yesterday about what happened in Lithonia. And I talked about it a little bit yesterday, where I wanted to revisit that. It is heartbreaking beyond belief. There is a local connection to the shooting story in Louisiana. Apparently, that young man, first name Dakota, the last name Theriot, I believe was his name, actually went to school here in the CSRA for several years, was a student at Lincoln County Middle School. Lincoln County, of course, where my wife grew up. And he's 21 now, I think, if memory serves. So he would have been there a couple of years ago. He's the kid who had a relationship with a female, and there are members of her family that are refuting or disputing the claim that they were a romantic couple, but they were friends at the very least. He had been invited to stay there at her house for a while. I don't know what the nature of their relationship was, but there was some relationship there. She, at some point, either had a falling out with him or decided to revoke the invitation, and her father told him he was no longer welcome to stay at the house. Rather than accepting that, the kid stole a handgun from his father, uses it to kill the girl and her parents, goes back to her house or his house, kills his parents and maybe a brother. I think it was five that he killed, so I'm missing somebody there.
No, the girl, her two parents, then his two parents, those five.
Oh, he didn't get the brother then. He didn't get his brother.
Not if it was just
five. He may have shot the brother but not killed him, but I don't know. But there were five deaths. He then gets in a car and drives to Richmond, Virginia, where he attempts to kill his own grandmother. Or, excuse me, that was the plan. The grandmother had a feeling it was coming, and so she left her house and immediately called the authorities, and that's where they picked him up. And sadly, he gave up. Folks, there's no conversation in a situation like that that should involve the term gun control, because he was breaking laws left, right, center, and sideways, and then did not go out and buy a gun. He stole a gun. There's not a rule. There's not legislation that's going to stop that kind of behavior. That kid is sick in the brain, and I can't imagine. I'm not going to dare sit here and excuse what he did because of mental illness. Don't think that's it at all. I'm just saying anyone that would commit that type of an act is twisted beyond belief. You think a rule about, oh, you can't carry a gun here. Oh, you can't buy a gun there. Oh, you can't get ammunition here. Don't even waste your breath. Let me tell you what restrictive gun laws can end up doing if you're not careful. God forbid this kid had done what he did and instead of running to Richmond, Virginia, just disappeared for a few days, but still had targets that he wanted to go after. Well, depending on where those targets live, those people could have gone to buy firearms to protect themselves, handguns specifically, we won't get into long guns. And depending on where they live, they may had to have waited a week or at least a couple of days. I mean, think about that. You know, Ben over here, sitting to my left, is in his mid-20s. If he got word that some crazy friend of his was looking for him and wanted to do him harm, but Ben doesn't have a gun, for Ben to walk into a store and buy a gun and immediately have it. You have to go through a background check to get a handgun. And depending on how fast the paperwork comes back, you're not walking out of that store with a gun that day. If your buddy that wants to kill you wants to hurt you, you're toast. Well, you can go hide under a bed somewhere and hope he doesn't find you. What happens? What happens if the poop hits the fan in your city, whether it's an unjust murder, whether it's a riot that gets out of control, and you're concerned for your family, your property, your business, and you decide, you know what? Wow. I better have a firearm. I'm not going to go hunting anybody down, but I'm going to sit right here, and if somebody breaks through that door or tries to get in and take what's mine or burn down my house or whatever, I'll be prepared. Depending on where you live, you're very limited on what you can get and how quick you can get it. Now, I am a firm believer in instantaneous background checks. Firm believer. I often make the joke, if you want to test what kind of technology exists, well, this is a great example. Just having lunch. And I looked down at my phone, and I noticed it was 2:10. Waitress comes by, hand her my credit card. Long before she comes back to the table, my phone goes, zzz, zzz, I look down, alert from American Express, and the dinner tab popped up on my phone less than 60 seconds after I put it in her hand. Now, I wonder where that signal went. It went through her register. It went God knows where. New York, Poughkeepsie, Antarctica. I don't know where it went. Norway. And it came back to me at my phone sitting at T's Restaurant on Highway 56. So that's how quick they know that, number one, the card is good. Number two, I've got the space on the card to afford the meal. And number three, oh, here's the signal that you know just in case that card was stolen, it's being used somewhere. You don't mean to tell me that we can't devise a system where when you buy a weapon, your criminal background can be checked instantaneously? I have never, and by the way, I'm going to tick off a lot of my conservative friends when I say this, but you know what? Live with it. Figure it out. This is why I am very strongly opposed to private sales between individuals going down the way that they do. Because my friend Ben here may be a nice law-abiding 25-year-old young man. 25?
Yeah.
But he could also be a serial killer with a criminal record that I don't know about. And I'm not going to sell my gun to him. I shouldn't sell my gun to him unless I've got the ability to do as thorough a background check on him as the state that I live in requires be done if I buy that gun retail. And the way that you handle this, if you've got a gun and you want to sell it to Ben, you should have to go to a retail outlet that is equipped to do such background checks. And the process should go through him. Again, I got a lot of conservative friends that scream about that. Tough. This is the compromise that we can make to the rest of the world, that when we say, excuse me, if it becomes apparent that I or my loved ones need to buy a firearm, we need to be able to do it right then, period. No matter who you are, if you're legally eligible to own a weapon, you should be able to do it instantaneously, right where you are. And again, if part of that, the trade-off, is sacrificing person-to-person sales, I got no problem with it. Not one little itty-bitty ounce or iota. We've got to do a better job at allowing human beings to protect themselves from predators like this kid in Louisiana.
Thanks for listening to the Rhodes Rewind of the Austin Rhodes Show. Listen to Austin weekdays from 3 till 6 on Augusta's News Talk and Information Station, WGAC, at 95.1 FM, 101.9 FM, and AM 580. Stream it live on WGAC.com or on the WGAC mobile app. Thanks for listening to the Rhodes Rewind of the Austin Rhodes Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.